Hello there. This is Creative Block. My name is Kyle Marshall. I'm the owner of Media Lab YYC, which is located in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. This is a podcast where I get to talk to artists and creative entrepreneurs. I don't have to be the one that tells you that COVID-19 has definitely changed people's plans over the last few weeks and will probably continue to do so in the upcoming months. My guest here today is Andrew Cooper. Originally, when we recorded this interview, we were under the impression that the play Moccas would be currently in its run. Well, of course, due to the ever-evolving culture that we find ourselves in, that production has been postponed for now. Not canceled as of yet, it has been postponed. So I'm hoping that you'll be able to enjoy this production at some point in the future. Nonetheless, myself and Andrew had a great conversation talking about influences in the theater, talking about musical theater in particular, which I'm a big fan of, and how we felt that Calgary fits into that landscape. There's still so much for you to take from this and understand why Jupiter Theater, one of the newest production companies here in town, is one that you should keep your eye on. We're going to go thank some sponsors first, and then we'll jump right into my conversation with Andrew Cooper. Creative Block is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. The Alberta Podcast Network promotes and supports Alberta-made podcasts and connects their audiences with Alberta-based businesses and organizations. This episode is brought to you by Park Power, a provider of electricity and natural gas in Alberta that offers low rates, awesome service, and profit sharing with local charities. Park Power is a small local business, and like many of you, it has been closely monitoring the news on COVID-19 and the world's rapidly changing circumstances. While many of their team are currently working remotely, the way Park Power does business has not changed, and their commitment to exceptional customer service will remain. Find out more about Park Power's response to the COVID-19 outbreak at parkpower.ca. This week's podcast is also brought to you by the Alberta Podcast Network, so let's listen to one of our other great shows.
It's a Conspiracy is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network and happily powered by ATB.
We are a bi-weekly podcast that aims to discuss selected conspiracy theories, alternative accounts, legends, myths, and more without coloring the topic with our conversation until the very end of the episode.
We also feature beer reviews, lame jokes, bad puns, far too many 80s movies references, geek culture, and general nerdery.
Our real aim is for fun, inclusive content that doesn't take itself too seriously.
You don't have to be blisteringly paranoid of mind control to enjoy a chin wag with your old pals, Greg, Charlie, Andrew, the Irish Madman, and our podcast puppies, Kylo and Ren.
It's a Conspiracy is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB.
Andrew G. Cooper, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's start here, just so that we get everyone up to speed. Who are you and what is it that you currently do?
Okay, I am a theater artist and producer. I think that's the most succinct way to do it. I do a lot of different things. I'm mostly a playwright and director as an artist, and then I work for a few different theater companies in town on the administrative and producing side of things.
When was the moment in your life where it was like, yes, like theater is the thing that I want to pursue?
That's a really great question. And sometimes I don't know how to answer this. I knew when I like got bit by the bug, which is some people talk about this like theater bug.
That's right.
Because it's so infectious and people love it. I was in high school and one of my friends, I was in a marketing class of all things. And he was like, that sounds boring. And I said, it was. So he invited me to do his musical theater class because they had a guy drop out of the class.
So this was in high school?
Yeah. I just moved to a new school.
Okay.
And I was like, this is so crazy. So I go to this new school and I don't really know many people, but he invites me to this class. And we were doing West Side Story that year. Mm. And this is like a very well-known play. And I remember they announced this thing. And everyone in the class was like, this is amazing. And I had no idea what that was or who Stephen Sondheim was. Anyway, so we were in this play and I did my first musical and I just loved it so much. And since then, I really have been doing it nonstop. But I guess when I knew I wanted to do this professionally, which I think is a sort of a separate question, was after I graduated from university, I started doing little small companies. And when I put on my first show for the first time, and it happened, like I self-produced a script that I wrote. And then I was like,
what were you going to university for?
A theater.
So okay, you did your theater degree.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'll fill in these gaps eventually. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But so when I self-produced my first show, I realized, oh, I can do this as a producer and an artist. And I can do both. And I've never looked back.
Mm. Was that in Vancouver that you self-produced it?
It was in Kamloops.
In Kamloops,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so curious. What is the theater scene like in Kamloops?
It's actually, for the size of the city, I think it's really great. There's only two regional theater companies outside of the Lower Mainland and the island in British Columbia. One of them is in Prince George and one of them is in Kamloops. Mm. So that kind of tells you something, that there's like a large professional theater company in the city. And then there was my company, which was like small, mid-level indie company, a summer stock company, which I worked for 6 years. The theater departments had a program for the university, and then there's some community theater. So it was a small scene, but it was pretty strong for its size because there was a theater university that tended to draw a lot of people in, and they would want to do things as they graduated. So there was a professional company and some other options.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was great, actually.
You know, I've been, through no like specific reason, I've been talking to a lot of people in the theater industry here in Calgary over the last few weeks. And what I love about this is that you talk about the Kamloops, and like there's like three or four different types of companies there that are putting on plays. And if you go up to Red Deer, there's a bunch. And like there's like four new theater companies that have opened up here in Calgary in the last few years.
Yeah.
Why do people want to continue to put on live theater?
I really think it's because there's nothing quite like it. There's so many amazing mediums that are coming out. Film has been around forever, but there's all these like virtual mediums and all this really neat cutting edge technology stuff that I think is so cool. But when you really get down to it, the way that humans connect in a live setting can't be replicated through technology. At least now, like maybe, who knows, in, you know, 50 or 100 years. There's all kinds of stuff. I watch Black Mirror and I'm like, maybe there'll be some crazy stuff. But right now, just being able to interact with another human being on stage or with the audience is something that other mediums of performance just doesn't do it the same way. People are always going to come back to it.
It's right. There's two moments I love that happen during live theater. One, when everyone is super silent. I love those moments. It's like you literally could hear a pin drop at this point. And I love that there's this huge collection of people, hundreds of people it can be. They're like, we are silent together.
There's so much focus.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like, I try and describe this. I've never been able to come up with a great explanation, but it's almost like you can hear the silence get louder instead of it being like an absence of silence. It's like you hear that come up.
An amplification of this silence.
The other thing I love is when things go wrong on stage. I'm one of those people.
Me too. This is why I think people love theater, because it's dangerous.
Yeah.
When you see a film, you're like, they edited this. It's so perfect. Mm-hmm. But in stage, if one little thing goes wrong, and then you watch how these humans deal with mistakes and that danger of anything could happen, like the lights could turn off, this person could miss his cue, say the wrong line.
Yeah, and then you have to roll with it.
And they do. And some of the, probably most of the really brilliant things I've seen on stage have been people where some small mistake happened and then they deal with it. They're just so in the moment. They're so human in those moments.
This was years ago. I was seeing a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream up in Edmonton. It was like the play within a play where the whole thing ends. But what, and I know for sure it was not supposed to happen, but the guy's wig fell off. Literally.
I love that.
And he just kept it going and kind of improv Shakespeare a little bit as he went and kind of put his hat wig on, put it back on, and just continued with the scene.
I mean, and that works because that play within a play is the most ridiculous thing ever. Like, I did that show in university, actually. And at one point we added this thing where I called for line and the stage manager like came in and gave me the line because as the actor I'd forgotten it and all. It's just like, what a riot. So that just fits so well within that
so
thing.
Good. What do you recall? And this, you can go any direction you want with this. What was the first thing you recall becoming obsessed with?
Non-theater related, just like me being obsessed with it?
Yeah.
Oh man, video games.
Okay.
When I was growing up, I loved me some video games. And
which ones are we talking about?
I'm really into fantasy and science fiction now, but back then it was really like the role-playing fantasy games, and specifically Final Fantasy the series. Mm-hmm. I think the first game that like really grabbed me, and I I've replayed this video game recently and I was like, oh, there's so many things in this video game that are still a big part of my life. And sure. I didn't realize like how impactful this game was, but it was Final Fantasy IX, which was on the PlayStation 1. It might've been the last one. It was the last of that series on the PlayStation 1. And it's so great. It's like this kind of like Renaissance era steampunky thing. And when I was replaying it recently, the opening sequence is a bunch of thieves who put on a theater show that's very Shakespearean. And I was like, this is what I do for a job now. So I love that.
Final Fantasy was so weird in that way because it always seemed, the few that I've played, I've definitely not played every single one of them. But the handful that I have, there's always like some mission where you have to go to the opera house. You have to go to this thing.
There's always this thing.
There's always a thing.
And I love that. And now that I'm doing it, I'm like, oh, I kind of see where this was going. So there's tons. I mean, and I still love fantasy. And I love this kind of early modern era because it wasn't like medieval. When people think of fantasy, they usually think of like the medieval fantasy. But that era of fantasy, I'm just like so, so obsessed with still. I think that was the beginning of it. Yeah, I love that.
I'm so jealous that you had a musical theater class in your high school.
Yes, not like, a lot of high schools do, right?
No, even like I have friends who even teach high school drama and stuff like that. But it's they have a theater department. They don't have like a musical theater department. What shows did you get to be a part of besides West Side Story?
I mean, we were so blessed. So for a little bit of context, I'd moved to Salmon Arm, which is this tiny, tiny town in the middle of BC.
I've driven through it.
Yeah, you probably have. It's like right on the Trans-Canada Highway. But they had a new theater, well, a new school. They had an entirely new high school built, like kind of right before I went there. It was within 10 years. So they had this new theater facility in this school, and they had a music director like who taught all the music choir band classes and a theater person, and they like collaborated to make a musical theater program. And yeah, and I didn't realize at the time how blessed I was, but I moved there in grade 11, so I only ever did two shows, and we did West Side Story, and I played Lieutenant Shrank, who is like the bad dude, and then like Shark Ensemble. And then I also did 42nd Street, and I played Julian Marsh, who's like the director, he's the lead role in that. So I went from like zero experience to in my second year, I played the lead role. And after that, I was like, now I'm a big star. And I went to university. And then I slowly learned that I'm actually not a great performer. And I've pulled back on that. But I think that acting is so accessible for people. And a lot of people in the theater profession seem to go into acting and then realize, like, there's so many different things. Like, there's costumes and sound and directing and movement and lighting and writing and all these things. But as an audience member, especially as a young person, it's usually, I think, the actors that you latch onto because you're like, those are people and I could be that person.
Yeah.
And then you find out about this whole world, which I love. It was really great. And musicals have always been a big part of my life and my career. Now I just want to do them more all the time.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean, we'll get into that here in a moment. So where did you go to university?
Originally, after graduating from high school and Salmon Arm, I went to Dalhousie in Halifax, on the East Coast, and I was there for 1 year. And then I really missed BC and some of my friends and the West. So I came back to TRU, which is the university in Kamloops. So it's really close to Salmon Arm. They're like an hour and a bit away from each other. And they had a 4-year BA theater program. So I did my entire training there.
This is always such a tough question, I think, maybe. But did you have an idea of like, okay, I'm going to go through this, get my degree, and then this is going to happen right after?
I totally
after?
Did. Okay. Yes. And I mean, it has changed so many times. But going into it, my thought was I was going to like get the degree and then go somewhere else and then end up on Broadway. Like was the plan. I was very focused on being a performer. And I did start dance around grade 11 when I got into musical. My friend was also like, you should take hip hop with us. And I was like, sure, hip hop. And then the next year I ended up taking tap and ballet and lyrical and contemporary and everything. So yeah, I really wanted to be a performer. And I had this sort of, I don't know how else to say it, like romantic vision of me being like a starving artist in New York. And I'm like really staunchly against this whole image of the starving artist. And I like really think we should be deconstructing that and not perpetuating this negative stereotype that artists have to be poor. And I'm like, artists don't have to be poor. But at the time I was like so romanticized, like I'm going to go and starve and like suffer for my
and
art.
Wear big sweaters. It's gonna be great.
That's right. Or like, you know, like smoke a cigarette and do, you know, all those artist things. So that was the original plan. But then being in BC for 4 years, that changed. And then when I graduated, I thought, yes, okay, I've graduated. I'm going to move to a big city, probably Vancouver. And then I just kept self-producing and getting other work. And I just ended up staying in Kamloops for about 5 years, even though I wanted to leave right away, but I just was so busy that eventually I just settled there, which was nice.
who are your people? Like, who are you like the most influenced by? There's like, oh, these are the people I want to emulate as I start to create my own stuff.
Oh man. These are probably going to be musical theater people.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Lin-Manuel Miranda. Mm-hmm. Hamilton is just like, I mean, everyone knows. I mean, theater people, not everyone knows, but it's such a huge thing and it's like really sunk into our culture.
I mean, we'll talk about someone who just consistently made stuff for himself.
Yeah.
I mean, he worked behind the scenes for so long and
doing everything.
In the Heights and then Hamilton right after.
Yeah.
It's like, that was him.
He's nonstop
hustling to make that stuff
work. That's right. I love Bobby Lopez. And for those who don't know, he's the composer behind Avenue Q and the Book of Mormon and the Frozen movies.
Correct. This is why he's an EGOT winner.
Yeah, I have not seen Frozen 2 yet, but I'm like, it's Bobby Lopez. I got to get my hands on that Frozen 2 movie. More localized. Jonathan Christensen runs Catalyst Theater in Edmonton. Okay. And I got to assist and direct with him on his latest musical, The Invisible. And I just like want to be him. I'm sure he won't listen to this, but he just does incredible work. He writes and directs and composes all of his own musicals. And he has such vision and such drive, and his company and his art is just so, so impactful and so wonderful. And then another one would be Daryl Cloran, who runs the Citadel Theater in Edmonton. And he used to run the Western Canada Theatre in Kamloops. So I got to assistant direct with him and work with that company. And then he moved out to Alberta and I soon followed after, but he is so visionary. Before we went on the air, we were talking about Six, which is a show that went to Edmonton pre-Broadway. I mean, it's running on Broadway right now. And last season, he did that with a show called Hadestown, brought it to Edmonton, then it went to the National in London, and then Broadway, and it ended up winning the Tony for Best Musical.
Yeah.
And like, he's just got vision. Finger he knows. He really does have the finger on the pulse.
I need to start making pilgrimages up there more often. I love the Citadel Theater.
It's amazing.
It's an amazing facility. Yes. And that is, I've told this story before about how in high school, I was part of theater club. So I never was in drama, but theater club was us teenagers. And once every couple of months, they would drive us up to Edmonton because I grew up in this very small town north of here. And we go and see productions. So this is how I saw.
I love that.
So this is like the first time I got to see a production of A Little Shop of Horrors. And this is how I saw Tennessee Williams stuff and like blah, blah, blah. There's so many firsts I had by being a part of that club that I loved.
I love that. And I'm like such a big proponent. Like I'm all about education and getting the youth into the theater. Yeah. And Daryl's really great for other things. He's like really ahead of a lot of big administrative movements that are happening right now. Like the Me Too movement was happening and now there's this big shift with a lot of racialized stuff and decolonizing theater and decolonizing Canada. And he's just like so good at being fair to everyone and to giving positions of power to people who need it and like underrepresented peoples and artists and that kind of thing. And that's something that I really strive for in my own work, especially as a producer.
So talking about that, being a producer, like tell me about some of your, I guess, highlights of the stuff that you have produced yourself.
Ooh, yeah, that's lovely. Some little highlights. Well, this past summer is probably one of the best things that I've self-produced, like from a producing perspective. I got a Canada Council grant to create a show in early 2019 called The Robber Bridegroom, which is a Brothers Grimm fairy tale. And we did it with puppetry and movement and music. So it was this kind of like grungy, dark Brothers Grimm fairy tale. And that was really well. We actually brought it to Calgary and we did it in Kamloops. And then we packed it up and put it in storage. And then this summer I was like, more people need to see this show. So we did a 4-city fringe tour. We went to Regina and Winnipeg and Vancouver and Victoria. And it went really, really well. I got funding to pay all the artists, which I'm so passionate about.
That's
paying
great
artists. That's so important to me. And then we also got a ton of great reviews. We got 5-star reviews, 4-star reviews, all kinds of really great press. So that to me validated myself as an artist because I also was a creator on the show, but as a producer, it was great to have the funding in place, organize this multi-city tour, and then get really great reviews. That was just like checkbox after checkbox of things that I really wanted to do as a producer. So that was just like such a really lovely experience. And then as soon as we were done that, I relocated to Calgary. So that was right before I came here permanently.
So you're in Calgary.
I'm here.
Right?
Yeah.
And you know, I alluded to the fact that there has been like these new theater companies that have popped up around the city.
There have been.
It seems like there's like a bunch of that all at once came out. What is the company that you began?
So the company that I founded and am now running is called Jupiter Theater. And I'm the artistic producer. I work with two lovely ladies as artistic associates, Madeline Taylor Gregg and Cassandra Watson. And together we are creating new works of theater here in Calgary.
New works as far as like local artists first time, or is this like worldwide new people, new type of theater?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's kind of a mix of both. The production that we're working on right now is a production that I've been fostering over the last few years, and it's actually written by someone from Kamloops. But all of the artists besides that one writer are local, and that's something that we're striving to do, is having local directors and performers and designers and that sort of thing. And the company's mandate is about creating new Canadian work, which I think is super important for the landscape of the country, but also our like international profile as Canadian artists and as theater artists. So we're creating lots of new work, and because I have a dance background and a sort of musical background, our shows typically have movement elements, whether that be dance or puppetry or fight choreo or whatever.
Why Jupiter?
I love space. I talked about how I just really love science fiction and fantasy. And Jupiter is my favorite planet for a number of reasons. Like, it's the biggest one and it's the prettiest one and it has all these great moons. And like, Europa is probably the most likely place we're going to find life in our solar system. But yeah, I like, we kind of tied in with this company that the company is about theater that moves and theater that explores. We're really trying to be like theatrical pioneers, and I'm using that as a sort of a vessel. Like, we want to get out to Jupiter, like, you know, as you know, Canada has this great space agency and the United States, and we're trying to explore the solar system more and send probes to these other planets and these moons. And that's something our company wants to be doing. We want to be like breaking new ground and exploring and getting out into space and that sort of thing.
I'm curious about like new companies that are starting, and actually there's even established ones that don't necessarily have like a physical, like, this is our theater. Like, this is not, we're not going to the Jupiter Theater.
No.
At least not yet.
That's right.
How do you forge that identity without having a physical space?
Excellent question. A big part of that is the type of show or the flavor of show that we do. So because I have a strong artistic mind and a vision that a lot of these shows are going to have a similar sort of thread to them, we're hoping eventually to be building a branding that when audiences see a Jupiter show, a Jupiter Theater show, they go like, yes, I know what to expect. And I love that. And we keep them coming back in that sense. And that's something that we're still exploring, because we're a really new company and we have new team members. We have this ensemble that we're developing new work with, and we're working with them to sort of forge our identity. But yeah, eventually we want people to recognize us through our work. In other capacities, when you're producing all new work, it's tough for people when it's not like Tennessee Williams or Sondheim and they don't know the name, the playwright's name. Mm-hmm. So what is it about the show that people are going to want to come and see it? And eventually, hopefully, it's the brand that they go, yes, okay, Jupiter always puts on great shows. I love all of their work. I've never heard of this play or this playwright, but it's probably good because everything else they do is really good. That's sort of what we're aiming for right now.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's the hardest part about when you're just starting out, is you have to spend part of your time convincing people to come out in the place, which is, I mean, that's the hard part. But once people start to come, I think I was talking with someone else and they mentioned that about theater in particular is you have to realize that the people are like, okay, like I'm coming here and I have to somewhat be guaranteed that I know I'm going to have a good time.
Yeah.
Unless it's a little bit more expensive than like a movie ticket. Yes, that sort
precisely.
Of thing. But I also, on the flip side, I get on this soapbox all the time and people get so sick of me talking about it. But I feel that Calgary has such great local talent.
Oh my gosh, it does. Yes,
and
preach.
We continually tell ourselves, well, we're not Toronto or we're not New York or we're not blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, maybe so, but Calgary is still Calgary and there's still great stuff here. So let's like celebrate the fact that we have great stuff.
Oh my goodness. I totally agree. I mean, I chose Calgary. I was looking at a lot of different cities and Toronto was on my list, and Calgary has such a strong theater scene and so many strong artists. And it's a great, great place for theater right now. So yeah, out of Edmonton and Vancouver and Toronto, I chose Calgary. So there's obviously something going on here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the show that is currently in production, currently running actually as this episode is going live, Maucus.
Yes.
Tell me about Maucus.
Okay, so Maucus is a play by George M. Johnson, who was originally my playwriting instructor when I was at TRU. So I met him as a student, and then I was running the company Chimera Theatre in Kamloops at the time. And I put out a call for scripts because we were looking for new works to present, and he submitted this and I was like, wow, this is really good. Like, you should teach playwriting or sometime. But we ended up doing a workshop for it, and it was so successful that we put it into production in Kamloops. So the script itself, not based on, but inspired by true events about a man named Antonis Mocas, who's a Colombian politician. And he was mayor of Bogota in the 1990s and then in the 2000s. And then he ran as president as the Green Party. He didn't win the presidential candidacy, whatever you call it. But he was mayor of Bogota twice. And he did all these really crazy experiments surrounding this thing called citizen culture, where he played with how to run a government and how to change things through creativity and play. And he's amazing and very inspiring. So what George did, the playwright, is he took these events that were very inspiring to him, and he created this fictional world where there's this city that doesn't really exist. That's sort of like an anywhere city. It's called Gopita, not Bogota. And there was this mayor who is struggling with all these problems. There's crime and there's pollution and climate change and traffic, and he just cannot solve these problems. And then he meets this clown, and this clown inspires him to look at things differently. And one of the reasons why I really love this play is because it's not left-wing politics, it's not right-wing politics. It's really just about, like, let's shift the lens. Let's change how we look at politics to try and creatively solve the problems. And just as an example of some of the crazy things that ended up in the show that Antonis Mocas did, there was lots of problems with the traffic police taking bribes and causing a lot of congestion. So he fired the police, and in our show, he fires all these traffic police and he replaces them with mimes. Mm-hmm. And this actually happened is that Antonis Mocas hired 420 mimes that were out there on the streets, like, helping police this, which is just so incredible. Like, can you imagine something like that happening in Calgary? Not that we have traffic police, but something like that. There was a serious water crisis issue. There's a shortage of water. And the team behind Mocas, they were all like researching, like, how can we do this thing? How can we convince people? What is actually the problem here? And it turned out that people were just using too much of it. So he made a TV ad where he and his wife showered on TV. And he was like, okay, so you folks, you should be showering in pairs and like turn off the water while you lather up and all these ways to save water. And it like worked. It was like 40% drop in water usage just because of these different ideas. And he had a night for women because there's this big thing where women weren't feeling safe to go out at night. Mm-hmm. So they made this voluntary night where all of the men would volunteer, and they weren't enforcing this, but they were like, we asked that the men volunteer to stay home so that the women can go out and just party, and then the men can stay home with the children. And they had like 700,000 women go out for the first couple nights. Like, it was just insane that they were identifying these problems and then coming up with creative solutions to them, just like totally outside the box. And the way he funded it, which is, this was the one thing that totally blows my mind, is he just asked, if you can afford to pay 10% more of your taxes, please do so. And so many people did. And that's how we funded all these really crazy antics, well-researched, but like crazy antics that he did. And then the play itself is very theatrical. There's a chorus that's sort of like a Greek chorus from ancient Greek theater, and the clown is sort of
singing,
like,
or just coming out and saying stuff.
They do a lot of choral. There's no singing. They do a lot of like choral talking and sort of talking over top of each other and stuff. And they do a lot of movement, which is something else that Greek theater did. And then the clown is sort of like a Shakespearean fool. And then the whole thing is set in a circus. So it's sort of really like a good way to pitch the show. It would be saying it's about like a mayor and its politics are a three-ring circus. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, really politics is all a show and it's such a circus. And there's these clown politicians, whatever. Like, that's really what the show is about. So it's funny and it's heartfelt and there's a lot of dance and movement and theatrical stuff and magic, and it's a big hoot. So far, it's been so much fun.
I'm so excited to be able to go and see it here. I mean, you talk about politics being like a three-ring circus. Mm-hmm. I'm going to reveal something about myself.
Lovely.
Here, which is, and this has a lot of crossover with live theater too, but one of my dirty little secrets, we'll call it, is that I'm a huge fan of pro wrestling.
I love this. Oh my goodness.
But I mean, when I really break it down, like, what is pro wrestling? Theater on the ground.
Oh, that's exactly it.
That's all it is.
They've got their characters, they've got their theme music, they're like doing their fight choreography. I love it.
And that's all. And when you finally realize that, there's like, oh, that's why I like musicals and wrestling at the same time. It's basically the same type of thing.
You just put those two things together.
So someone needs to make a wrestling musical is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, no. Really quick sidetrack. Did you see Giant?
I've not seen Giant.
Okay, no. So Giant was the Ghost River Theater's show about Andre the Giant. And right. There was puppetry and there was movement, but there was a lot of wrestling and it was amazing.
I know. And I was so I could not make my schedule work to go and actually go and see it, which was very distressing to me. This is all going to the fact that I notice now, whether it's politics or, you know, current events, when people are like, "Oh, you're just you're playing a part," you're like, you're goosing the audience a little bit. So you kind of, I don't know, you start to see like behind the mask a little bit, and it's like a lot of this is just theater. And once you kind of clock into that, it's like, "Oh, I see what you're doing and how you're trying to make the audience sway one way or the other."
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like a lot of politicians have that sort of skill, and like that's really like a talented actor on stage needs to be able to pull the audience and sway them one way or the other. Like that's kind of the whole thing, like, of being a great actor is being to really affect your audience. And I'd say that's the same for a great politician. Like you need to be able to convince people and get them on your side. So
I'm sorry if you already mentioned this, but Jupiter Theater started when? Like when was like day one of operations?
I did not mention this. So incorporated, we were just incorporated this past June. So we're a very recent company. But when we brought the Robert Bridegroom to Calgary in January of 2019, that was a co-production with Jupiter Theater. We just weren't incorporated yet. So this is technically our first main stage production, Moccasins, as our own company. But we did have kind of a season last year where we presented this show that I was already working on with Chimera Theater in Kamloops.
This is kind of a dumb question. I apologize. But as far as your theater season goes, we have Moccasins currently going. What's next inside of the Jupiter season?
Oh, great. Well, so this is actually the end of our season because it's kind of late in the year. But at the beginning of the season last fall in October or November, we did a devised piece called Four. So we have an ensemble that we call the Jets, the Jupiter Ensemble Theater Syndicate, and we create new work. So we were doing a devised workshop of a show that was in progress about the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. And then in January, we did stage readings of new works by local playwrights. And then we have Moccasins now, and then we have not announced our next season yet, but we are planning kind of a similar structure that we'll do like an ensemble devised show probably in the fall. We'll do more development work, stage readings in the winter, and then we'll have our main stage season sort of in this like March, April sort of time slot.
Now, I forgot to actually mention this too. Where are your productions happening?
Oh, of course. We need to tell people how they can go and see Moccasins.
Yeah.
So we are currently doing it in the West Village Theater, which is in Sonalta in the West Village. So it's just off 10th Avenue. It's a really great black box theater space.
Can I say, I didn't actually even know there was a theater there.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So this is one of the things. So the other company that I work with is called Ghost River Theater. It's the one that produced Giant. So I'm the producer of that company. And they're one of the companies in residence at the West Village Theater. And that's something that we're starting to work on, just letting people know like, hey, there's a theater here and it's really good and like cool work happens in this space. So it just happens that Moccasins was already booked in that theater because I liked it so much. And that happened before it was brought on. But yeah, it's a great space. The show is going on. So as you're listening to this, we close on the 4th of April. So we're running this whole weekend. And that's where we're doing that presently. That's kind of like our unofficial home base.
You mentioned that you also work with a bunch of other companies and work in producing roles and teaching and stuff. Like, can you just go into detail a little bit about like what it else that you're doing? It sounds like you don't have a lot of free time.
Oh boy, I calculated, I think it was last night or the night before, the number of hours that I work every week right now. And this is a very busy time and it's a really high number, I won't say, but it's like, oh yeah, I'm working so much. So yes, I'm the artistic producer with Jupiter and we're in production right now. So I'm particularly busy. I'm the producer with Ghost River Theater. And then I'm currently directing a show called Trauma with Do It Yourself Theater. And that one goes up in April and May at the Motel Theater in the Arts Common. And then I'm the director and swing choreographer Cirque de la Nuit's upcoming production Epoch, which also happens in April. So those are sort of like the hands-on projects I'm doing.
So a lot of stuff coming up in the next couple months.
Yeah. And yes. And then I'm producing with the Canmore Summer Theater Festival in Canmore, and it's a summer theater festival. It's a really apt name. We're doing The Hobbit.
It actually happens in winter and it's in Chestermere.
Like you never know, right? Yeah. So we're doing Much Ado About Nothing, the Shakespeare play, and The Hobbit. And once again, I love fantasy and The Hobbit was one of my favorite books. So I'm so excited about that.
I thought you had to split that up into three movies.
Yeah, right. So how are we going to fit into
one play?
You never know. You'll have to come and see it. There'll be puppets and fight choreo and all kinds of fun stuff in that. So we're kind of in pre-production right now. They have already had auditions and they're having callbacks. So the shows will probably be cast by the time this podcast mm-hmm. comes out. So that's kind of like long-term what I'm working on. And then I've got like my toes in like a few other things here and there. So I do teach dance at currently two different dance studios. I teach at a studio in Cochrane called Eurythmics and a studio in the Northwest called Premier. And those takes up my evenings. So yeah, I'm a dancer. Well, really, I'm a dance teacher and choreographer. I'm not really a dancer.
Sure, okay. Yeah.
But I am doing the choreography for Maucus. So there's a lot of dance sequence in that show, and there's a lot of physical storytelling kind of interspersed throughout the scenes and stuff.
How would you describe your choreography?
Oh, wow. How would I describe? It's kind of, it's somewhere between contemporary jazz and hip hop, which are probably my like three biggest influences. I mean, there's like a little peppering of Fosse in there. And like, yeah, I kind of pull from everything. Mm-hmm. And because I'm not, I mean, I do ballet, but I'm not like a really technically trained dancer. I think it's accessible to musical theater, I think. And it kind of works for musical theater really well. So
these are kind of interrelated. So first question is, because you're so focused with Jupiter to have a voice for new talent, mm-hmm. local talent, mm-hmm. is there a story you hope comes through that theater? What kind of stories do you hope you continue or are able to tell?
Yeah, one thing that we were trying to do with Four, and the reason why I like Devise Theater is because we're trying to tell stories that are contemporary and related to the people of Calgary. So with Four, it was about the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, but we were asking, really the question is, what would they look like today? Mm. So Pestilence was sort of like this internet social media thing that was like taking over people's brains, that sort of thing. And Famine was really about this like youth in poverty and like homeless crisis. So it was a lot more like contemporary issues. So that's something I really am interested in exploring. And that's part of Jupiter's mandate, is exploring contemporary social issues like through theater and through movement. But one of my biggest things aesthetically as an artist is myths and folklore and fairy tales. So a lot of my shows have been adaptations of fairy tales or myths. We've done a Greek show called Perseus and Andromeda, which is based on the Andromeda myth. By Euripides, who is an ancient Greek playwright. We did two fairy tale shows and that sort of aesthetic. And I love to go, okay, so these are really old stories. How can we tell those in a way that resonates with people today? So it's sort of like finding out what's important to Calgarians and then taking these old stories and presenting them in a way that hopefully people really get. And they go, oh my goodness, that's still something we're dealing with. Yeah, that really hits me. That's sort of the aim right now.
This is not to put you on the spot, but have you considered doing the same thing for like First Nations stories?
Yes, I would love to so much. And I have a lot of like feelings and thinkings about this. A big part of it is that I am a white male. Right. You can't tell over the radio.
Everybody knew.
No, yeah, they all knew. I'm a settler, so... Like, I mean, I would love to collaborate with First Nation artists and have them tell their stories, especially what I would call their mythology. But that's also me sort of revealing my whiteness, because to them, it's, you know, it's not mythology.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, it's religion or it's their ancestry or whatever it is. So, yeah, I'm super interested in, and I've started little conversations about that. And it's something I'm for sure interested in pursuing in the future, because I am fascinated by all mythologies, and because they're the stories that we tell, and those, wherever they come from, are really what makes us human. And then that really, I think, goes back to your question about theater. Mm-hmm. It's like, why is theater still around? People have been saying theater is dying, and I'm like, theater isn't going anywhere, folks. It's so human, and telling stories is a big part of, you know, whether we were back doing it around campfires or we're doing it on Broadway, it's essentially the same thing, I think.
Yeah, you're telling that human story, and you're, mm-hmm. I don't know, for me, this is true with like fiction, and but especially in theater, where I think the underlying hope is that there's that bit of empathy that the audience kind of learns, or I'm seeing this from a different angle or for a different point of view.
Yeah.
That hadn't been presented to me before, and so, oh, this makes so much more sense.
Yeah.
And so I can kind of work through those feelings within this fiction that's being presented to me up on stage. But let's say that you had the opportunity to adapt an existing work. We're just giving you a bunch of money to say, like, go nuts. What work would you love to be able to adapt?
Oh, well, does it have to be outside of copyright, or can it be anything?
Anything.
Okay. I've got I actually have a list of this because okay. A big thing that I do is adapt work. Everything Jules Verne is on my list. I love Jules Verne. He's like this steampunky early science fiction writer from France in the 19th century, and I love him. I would really love to take a stab at some Robert Louis Stevenson, who did like Treasure Island and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. There's this like common thing. He's also a 19th century novelist.
I see a theme happening here.
Yeah. There's those things. I've done Frankenstein as an adaptation, and I would love to do that again. And Dracula is also on my list, which is once again a 19th century novelist. But I mean, that's like such good gothic horror. And I love kind of like horrors and thrillers and stuff. Well, they're all 19th century, so these are all outside of copyright. Like, there's nothing stopping me. I could go you and could. Adapt these things. Those are all kind of like on my list. But there's a few other things that I would really like. The Little Prince is such a beautiful little science fiction story. And Theatre Calgary did it as a musical. Like recently, it was before I came here, and I didn't get to see it, unfortunately. But
How about a revival? Is there any like revivals that you would love to get your hands on?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, I do love West Side Story because I was in it in high school. And once again, with like me being white, I'm like, is this my story to tell? There's like a lot of issues around. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like played a shark in high school, which if at the time that was like not on anyone's radar, you know, but
now it'd be like a little bit eyebrow raised.
Yeah. If a high school in Calgary was doing West Side Story and it was a whole bunch of white people, I would raise eyebrows at that. I really would. So that's something that I think is so great that people are being conscious of. And this is a big part of what I'm doing as a producer is being, trying to be more conscious of these people and like, whose story is this? That's like kind of something that we ask. But other, like we're talking about revivals. I'm like doing musicals now. Other musicals that I really love. This one is on Broadway and it will never be revived because I think it will just run forever. But I love The Book of Mormon so dearly. And I would love to do The Book of Mormon somehow.
That's an interesting conception of like, because it's still running, it's hard to even conceptualize this. But like, how would we do a different take on The Book
That's
of Mormon?
That's what I mean. Right? Like, it's thing right now. But I'm like, I mean, I could look at kind of different ways or a different interesting way to do that. Yeah, I usually think of like myths and old stories, 100-year-old stories. There's a few Shakespeare plays that I'd really love to adapt to, like Macbeth and Richard III are both on my list. Once again, they're like dark and lots of people die, which seems to be a common theme in my work. Yeah, so like there's old Shakespeare stuff, but yeah, there's shows that are running right now that's like, how would you, like what would you do if it was like a very different version of Book of Mormon?
Like, let's strip this down. Like, how can we come at this from a different angle? Just because we've mentioned all of them, I need to like bring this all together, which is the, I do another podcast called Putting It Together. It's all about Stephen Sondheim specifically. So
You're a Sondheim person.
So I go through his entire body of work, show and song by song. So I'm finishing up Company right now.
I need to listen to this podcast.
Yes, tell all your friends.
I will. Okay, everyone, let's do this.
But when I was going through the West Side Story season, one thing I found fascinating, which I still don't know for sure if the movie version that's coming out in December is going to do this, but I kind of hope they do. Did you ever read up on the 2009 revival of West Side Story and what they did?
Not a whole, like I'm kind of aware of it, but I wouldn't say I've like read up on
So this, actually Lin-Manuel Miranda came and helped out Sondheim
he did the Spanish lyrics.
Right, so he did all the Spanish lyrics, which they actually reverted after like 8 weeks because all the tourists were complaining that they couldn't understand that.
Oh, well. Fuck those tourists.
I know. It's like, but that's the point. Like, anyways, I love that concept. I wish someone would adapt that version specifically.
Oh, I would love to
go and see that and hear like I Feel Pretty and all the shark songs in Spanish because like, well, yeah, of course.
Well, this is the whole thing that I'm talking about that I'm like, yes, once again, I'm not the person to do that, but I'm that's what should be happening. That we should be taking these stories and going, whose story is this? And that's a Latinx story. Mm-hmm. And Lin-Manuel comes in and does all the lyrics in Spanish. And I'm like, yeah, I would love to go and this is what it should be like. They should be singing in Spanish because that's their language. I love that.
Yeah. Looking to the future, what are some of your hopes and dreams? What's on your bucket list for like the next 2 years?
Well, number one, I would really like if Mockus sold out.
Sure.
So if you are listening to this, please come and see that show. But in the future, one thing that I really want to be doing with Jupiter is touring our shows. Mm. So with new creations, a lot of planning and work and money goes into creating a show. And then sometimes you run for 2 weeks and then you put the show in storage or you mm-hmm. get rid of it and then it's done and no one ever gets to see it again. And that just breaks my heart. So I want to take the shows that we all invest a lot of time and money and resources into and then let other people see them. And that's what I did. We were talking about this tour that I went on. I got to take it to 4 new cities and have lots of different audiences appreciate and get it reviewed everywhere else. That's a direction that I really want to go. So I want to be taking the shows that I'm doing and touring nationally. And then probably not in 2 years, but as like a 5 to 10 year plan, I would really love to be touring internationally and taking Canadian art overseas, like to the Edinburgh Festival mm-hmm. or to the United States or what have it. I really do feel like Canadian contemporary theater is important and is so impactful and that the rest of the world needs to see it.
Well, I mean, yeah, and there's some great Canadian stories. I mean, I know we heard about like the biggest hits, like Come From Away yeah. was a really great success. Yeah. Sorry, The Drowsy Chaperone from years ago was like a Canadian production first.
I did not know that. Oh, the yeah. Drowsy Chaperone is Canadian. Mm-hmm. No
sorry,
way.
Sorry, in Toronto.
I love it even more.
What is it, Bob? Is it Bob Clark? Oh, I should know who the creator of that guy. Crazy. Whoever started as literally the guy in chair
yeah.
role, like he's Canadian and he started it.
I love that. Yeah, there's a lot of big hits.
Yeah, so there's that stuff. There's great stuff being created and we need to, I think, be more forceful as we push yeah. things down there.
Yeah.
Like, because the Stratford Festival is still like super popular and like it's there's huge. All these things all over the place. Yeah, yeah, Edmonton yeah. Fringe is getting bigger and bigger and
yeah.
that sort of thing.
We've got a lot of great stuff here. And yeah, one of my goals as a producer and as an artist is to just share Canadian work, new Canadian work with the world. Mm-hmm.
I know it's very different because Broadway is its own beast, but have you mm-hmm. ever considered like recording for posterity? That seems like probably a big expense for like local theater groups
yeah,
to do
so. Yeah,
I mean,
like it's definitely crossed my mind. And there are other ways to do that on smaller scale. Mm-hmm. So I used to run an improv troupe, and one thing that we were talking about is like live streaming our episodes so that yeah. people can't see it, and then you know throw that up on YouTube, and that's a much different beast because you just like throw a camera in the back of the room and that sort of thing. But one thing that we're doing now, because we want to be touring these shows, is we are going to get more high quality recordings of them, because to sell the show and also to apply for further funding if we want to tour it or whatever, usually need a lot of good video footage. So I'm going to be having a lot of video footage, and like maybe something will happen with it yeah. down the road. Yeah, like if a show is never ever going to tour, which I hope that's not the case, and we have all this footage, yeah, why not? Like that's another way to share art at very accessibly. If you just put it on the internet and go like, great, people in Australia can see it, people in Japan can see it, like people anywhere can just access the internet. So I think that is an avenue to start this. Once again, I like think being live with the performers and the audience is the most important part of theater, but that's still a way to spread theater and spread Canadian theater around mm-hmm. the world.
You know, at the beginning of our conversation, we were kind of mentioning about like new technologies and how that's maybe going to impact theater as we go through it. One of the coolest things that someone brought to my attention, I know this couple that actually are producing VR content and mm-hmm. you know that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And what they told me, which I never considered before, is that for a lot of 3D environments, especially if we're talking about like fiction stuff that's being created in that environment now, mm-hmm. they're actually going to a lot of theater technicians because they understand how to make it
space
wise. Yes. Whereas movie people are like, no, we're doing it from a speaker
yeah.
coming at the audience, where a theater
is three-dimensional
need to make sure like the entire theater hears it.
I love
so there's like this push of like theater people helping out VR people that are kind of mm-hmm. doing that whole thing.
Yeah, well, I think that VR is going to get into theater before it gets into film, by far, in my opinion, just because it's so yeah, it's more personal, and mm-hmm. theater's always been about being more personal.
Yeah, so there's exciting things afoot.
Yeah, there's a market there.
Thank you so much for coming out and talking oh, yeah. with me here today. Your busy, busy schedule. One more time, if people wanted to stay in contact with you, what is the easiest way to do so?
The easiest way to get in contact with me is probably through my website, which is andrewgcooper.com. And if you're interested in Theater Jupiter, you can go to theaterjupiter.com. You can see our shows and all of that sort of stuff. But yeah, if you want to collaborate or if you want to know more about my work, just go to the website and there's all kinds of stuff there.
Cool. Thanks, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was a ton of fun.
Thank you to the Alberta Podcast Network, to ATB, and to Park Power this week. If you have suggestions for people you'd like me to talk to, even if that's you, please send those to info@medialabyyc.com. And most importantly, thank you for listening. Let other people know if you enjoy it. We'll be back again in a couple of weeks. Have a great day.